You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrett.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. Tonight at 7:30, Tom Ashbrook is at Milwaukee's Latino Arts Center for a live show on race in the age of President Trump. Tune into a live stream on Wisconsin Public Radio's Facebook page.
First, I ask you this question. Is creativity good or bad? No-brainer, right? Most of us are thinking, yeah, of course, creativity, pretty good thing. And a lot of employers these days and surveys say creativity is one of the most important traits they look for in their employees.
So we think we like creativity, but our next guest says in real life we fear it, we resist it, and we actively suppress it. In schools, businesses, and in our daily lives, we tend to reject creative ideas in favor of familiar ones.
Jennifer Mueller joins us now. She's a social psychologist, associate professor at the University of San Diego, and author of the new book, Creative Change: Why We Resist It, How We Can Embrace It. Jennifer, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
So we love creativity in theory, but not necessarily in practice. Why is that?
I suppose that's in some ways very shocking for some people. And in other situations, we might think, of course, that's true. Of course, we love the status quo. Survival of the fittest, right? If stuff has existed for a long time, it must be good. Otherwise, why would we do it? But the problem, of course, with that thinking is just because something exists doesn't actually mean it's good. So when I started asking this question, I'm asking this, of course, as a social psychologist in a field that studies generating ideas and generate more and more ideas. The more ideas, the better. And you'll hear this frequently from many people who talk about how to cultivate creativity in an organization or in a school. And so the result is you have skunk works. That is, you put creativity in an environment where, okay, now is the time to be creative and everybody's going to brainstorm ideas, or students are going to be creative now, and all that's all great and fine. And then the question is, what happens next? Where do those ideas go? And, well, we thought, we assumed that if an idea is great and if idea is really creative, get implemented. People will like it. People will endorse it and embrace it. But what we've found and what we're finding is the opposite, is that the more creative an idea is, the less likely it is to be endorsed. And in fact, what we find is that when ideas are creative, decision makers and other gatekeepers are more likely to have a negative knee-jerk reaction to this idea than they are to say, wow, that idea is amazing, it's creative, let's embrace it. So there's a problem in how we're evaluating these ideas, and I wanted to write a book to help people learn how to do better.
Right. And you've done experiments on this. You've done research on this. It really seems to come to that again and again, doesn't it? When we're faced with a status quo type alternative or creative alternative, we tend to lean toward that status quo.
That's right. And one of the studies, I think the most well-known study that we conducted with Shmuel Malani and Jack Gonzalo, what we did was we wanted to know if this reaction was something people were aware of, or at least if they would admit it. You know, would people admit this dislike or rejection of creativity? Would they say, yes, no, creativity is not what I want, or I don't like it, or even I hate it? So what we did is we brought people in the lab and we asked them. We said, do you like creativity? And then we gave them a reaction time test where we asked them to pair words like creative with words like heaven or words like vomit. And we found that across the board, people said they love creativity and they paired words like creative with words like heaven. All well and good, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we put people in a mindset that's not a tolerance of creativity. We asked people to write a statement. For every problem, there's one correct solution. We asked people to write an essay in response to that statement. Or for every problem, there's multiple solutions. So we randomly assigned them to focus on there's a correct solution, like, you know, a multiple choice test, for example, or there's multiple possible solutions. And then when we asked them, do you love creativity? Everybody across the board said, yeah, I love creativity. But when we gave them the reaction time test, the people who were in the mindset about there's one correct solution associated the word creative with the word vomit, even though they told us they love creativity. And when they saw a creative idea, they said, that's not creative. So what we found was that people may not be aware of, or they may not be willing to admit, the creativity vomit connection. And furthermore, this test was done with undergraduates in a liberal arts university. This reaction we saw happen amongst people who are super, super high on openness to experience, which is a personality variable we find is very much related to whether or not people can generate these ideas. So it suggests just because you can generate a lot of ideas does nothing in terms of your ability to then stop this knee-jerk reaction from taking you over and rejecting the creative ideas that you might need, solutions you might need, perhaps when you need them most.
Talking to Jennifer Mueller, her new book is Creative Change, Why We Resist It, How We Can Embrace It. Jennifer, a scary question maybe. We say good things about creativity, but what if the reason we deep down don't like it that much is, well, maybe it's not that good. Maybe it's not that important. Is creativity really something that is that much of a value?
This is such a deep and wonderful question. You know, whether or not we need to be more creative and we need to speed up or not is something that I think, you know, we can debate forever. If you look at, for example, artificial intelligence, people say, slow down. Don't go there. you know, we don't want to create beings who could effectively exterminate us, for example. In other cases, we think about innovation where you have the choice of dying or taking a new medication no one has ever taken before. And in that case, we're like, well, no, we really need a better way in that context. So I think it's very context dependent. But I do think that there are situations when we know we can do better. It's hard to know, though, when we're already succeeding. This is what happened at RIM. You may recall BlackBerry. And you may recall that RIM was doing extremely well at one point. So well, even though pretty much the market was turning in a different direction, for example, to what is now an iPhone. And so at the time, they couldn't turn because they saw the metrics and the metrics looked great. So it's really hard to know when you need creativity. But I would say that if we can train ourselves to learn how to recognize it, we might do a better job at winnowing through the ideas that are really bad and problematic and choosing and being able to be open to the ideas we really need.
Let's talk about how we as individuals can overcome some of these obstacles. How can we, you talk about disrupting our thinking to be more creative. How can we, sitting at home or sitting in the office, whatever, do that?
It's really hard to learn the skill. So what I'll say is there was in 2010, IBM conducted a survey amongst 1,500 leaders and asked these leaders, nominate the number one leadership skill you think people need to lead in this new economy, globalization and changing regulations and rules and whatnot. And overwhelmingly, they said creativity. And what they meant by creativity was the ability to embrace uncertainty, to recognize opportunity, and to basically manage disruptive change. But they also said 50% or more of these executives admitted they didn't feel trained. They didn't feel that they had the skills to do this kind of thinking. And why is that? That's kind of astounding because most of those executives in that sample probably had MBAs and probably had extensive training in decision making. And so how do we know to make decisions? Well, we know when we make a decision, we look at the metrics. If the metrics are bad, for example, if nobody has, it doesn't have Facebook likes or other investors or people aren't buying something, we think it's bad, right? It's not a good idea. If the metrics are good, we assume, okay, that must be a good idea. And that's pretty much a universal way we've taught people in finance and accounting and whatnot to think about making decisions, to look at the hard data. Here's the problem, though. The hard data when it comes to a creative idea is typically really buggy, like buggy to the point to which it's almost not worth using and thinking of as the metric, as the indicator of success. I mean, I think the Bloomberg Business just came out with their review of the Juicero juicer. Have you seen this?
Yes.
This is a juicer that is super high tech, and it comes with a packet of something, and you put it in the juicer, and it's supposed to communicate to, I don't know, the central office to know if the juice is fresh and whatnot, and it pours out juice. Well, they just did a very clever video of the juicer, this high-tech machine, it's white, it looks designed beautifully, versus a person squeezing the bag into a cup. And they find that the high-tech juicer with all of this power is just as good as a person squeezing the juice into a cup. Well, investors spent $120 million on the Juicero. And so people are kind of laughing, thinking, what were they investing in? And the possibility is the investors were investing in the fact that other investors were investing. You see what I'm saying? But the problem with those kind of metrics of the number of investors investing is that people are following the herd. But that's the problem. Is people aren't actually looking at the product and really vetting it and determining, is it really good and is there a use? Why would I need a $400 juicer if I could take the packet of juice and pour it into a glass? So there's this issue with these metrics. They're just not, you know, people are trained to use them, but I don't think they're trained to use them in the way they need to be used when an idea is really new. Because when an idea is really new, the metrics are buggy, you can fake them, you can buy Facebook likes from India, or the idea itself is great, they just didn't pivot to the right audience yet, or they don't yet have metrics because it's so new they haven't put it on the market. So one thing to do is to kind of think about, are you in this mindset that wants that correct solution? Remember in the laboratory, we put people in this kind of mindset around there's a correct solution. And in business, that means you focus on best practices, right? Because something to be the best, you have to vet it. You have to know it's better than something else. It means that you're not focusing on accuracy. Instead, you know, inventors don't necessarily think in that way. And what inventors do when they look at a metric is they say, huh, I wonder why people are doing this. I wonder what this means. I wonder how this idea could be improved. So they look at the metric to tell them how the product needs to improve in the future, not the value of the product now. And I think that that kind of a shift in mindset in the way we evaluate ideas could really make a huge difference in the extent to which people can kind of open up and see value in the new where they might not otherwise.
We're talking about creativity with Jennifer Mueller. Her new book is Creative Change, Why We Resist It, How We Can Embrace It. She says we all think we like creative thinking, but in real life, on the job, maybe in school, we tend to stifle and resist creativity.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you have room to be creative in your work, in your studies, in your daily life? Or do creative ideas get shot down, maybe by your boss, your colleagues, or that nagging inner voice that doesn't seem to want to take a chance on something new? You can call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time.
Jennifer Mueller is with us talking about creativity and why we love it and fear it. Her new book is called Creative Change, Why We Resist It and How We Can Embrace It.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you have the room to be creative, maybe at your workplace, in your daily life, in your schooling? And is that creativity embraced? Do people run with the creative new solutions, fun new ideas, or do they just get quashed like a bug? Call in at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. Gail is with us in Fish Creek. Gail, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. This is a great topic. It's one that I hold dear to my heart because I help people get through their blocks to get to their full potential of their own creative inner being. And I have a question here. What do we do now that the great authority of education for the country had decided back in the 80s to not do what Richard Feynman and a group of very intelligent men suggested that we do, teach the young children basic elementary physics before we teach them anything to do with numbers, because that would have changed their mindset of how they learn and how they think, be able, and then they would have been able to come up with all of the answers that we need now. And these children would have been like in their 30s and 40s now. What do we do because the system said no?
Gail, thanks for the call. Jennifer, I don't know if you know about that specific debate, but you do talk about education. Are we educating in a way that encourages creativity?
I'll tell you what the data is showing with respect to creativity in education. What the data is showing is that millennials, the millennial generation, is just as able to generate original ideas as prior generations, but they have less interest in elaborating on these ideas. That means they have less motivation around explaining their ideas and going into detail about them. There was another survey that was done that showed that relative to other generations, millennials had more anxiety around embracing creativity and running with creativity. We know that the millennial generation, I think, is the least likely generation to start up businesses, new businesses, which was a major engine of economic growth and new jobs. So our young people, it seems, the data would say, that they're not feeling able. They're able to generate the ideas, but they're not necessarily able to embrace them and articulate them and implement them and go and run with it and take the risks associated with it. And the question is, what's going on? It could be, and one possibility is, we see a rise in this way of teaching and a way of thinking about teaching as reducing ambiguity for the student and giving them lots of assignments where the goal is to help them understand, to learn and memorize and to find the correct answer, right? And like in a multiple choice test. And to be able, and that's really important because as teachers, you really want to fairly grade students. If there's no right answer, how do you know who to give an A and who to give a C? Because giving that person, a child, a C might mean they can't get into the school of their choice. It could really impact their life. So you want that to be fair. And having correct solutions really helps with that. But creativity in that context is a real nuisance. You know, when I personally give exercises and tell students to be creative, they hate it. In fact, one student was saying to me, Jennifer, you know, Professor Mueller, you know, maybe it's too late for us. Because the truth is, we just want to know what will get us the A. We want to know. And with creativity, we can't know because there's no rubric. There's no specific way you can tell us to be creative. I think that's a little extreme. And I think that, you know, education's just gone and veered on one end of giving people a lot of assignments with correct answers. But there's another way to approach education, and some places are already doing this, where you are focusing on children taking a project all the way through. They have a, so this is like in science fairs, right, where they have a project, they have an idea, they have to execute it, they have to communicate it, and then they get to see the gatekeepers and how the gatekeepers respond to it. And that interaction, right, the idea that you might not get the first prize if you're doing something creative, and why is that so, and you've got to keep pushing, and, you know, what does it mean? What does this word failure even mean if at the end of it all you had a great time and you learned something new, and maybe down the road, you know, you had a great story for your college admissions? So I think that there's a really wonderful dialogue to be having in education right now that's not being had, and I think there's a big problem that we face, and it's resulting in fewer jobs. And I think this is something we should start to address in our policy and educate our educators how to feel comfortable with creativity and bring it back into the classroom now that it's gone.
Let's go back to our callers now. Pam is on the line in Beloit. Pam, hi.
She just said all that I wanted to say. That was so good. But it is about education, but it is also about an energy of the, I think it's the male-female energy of power control, this is the right answer, versus the motivation that women have for creating. It's the, you know, build a woman a home and what do you have? Build a woman a house and then she creates the home. It's an essence of beauty that needs to be taught that's from the intersection of your unique individual soul exposing itself to the unknown.
Pam, thanks for the call. A bit metaphysical there, Jennifer, but is there something to that, the willing to, in some ways, let ourselves be exposed by taking a chance of having a creative idea? It might be a massive failure, but we're going to not let the fear keep us from sharing it.
Well, I think another way to say that beautiful sentiment is the basic build, I believe, the basic building blocks of creativity is this ability to change your mind, is the ability to think one way and then kind of broaden how you think to do something else. And this, of course, happens when you have children. I'm sure that people, when after they have children, have a totally different view of what you know, having a children, yes, because how can you know before you do it? And that's a situation where our behavior kind of changes our mind for us. But there's many instances when we have to change our mind before our behavior can follow us, you know, before we can. And I think that there's a lot of focus on, for example, leaders that know the answer and have all of the confidence to move the needle forward. And that's, I think, a little bit disingenuous and problematic when you have creativity, because you don't know the answer with creativity. You don't know ultimately whether or not it will work, or how it will work, or even when it will work. And so all that confidence is really bravado in the face of true creativity and innovation. And so I think it's retraining ourselves to recognize when we're changing our mind and managing innovation, what that looks like and how different it is. And when we also need to be correct, and we also need to be efficient, because that's part of us too, and we do need that too. It's also valuable. It's just knowing that that's a separate skill and not necessarily transferable when we need to be creative.
Thanks for the call, Pam. Jennifer, just our last minute, do you see the tide turning somewhat and people recognizing that they're not really embracing creativity and starting to try to open things up and really do something with it?
I really do, Rob. I see two trends. The first trend is it's really easy to fake creativity. So you see Silicon Valley companies like Fitbit for dogs, you know, and they're getting all this funding, but there's not actual creativity. It's not providing value necessarily, because you can fake it, and there are all kinds of metrics that you can use to fake it, and you can buy them in India and whatnot. And the other side of it is you can have true creativity, and it's very hard for people to recognize it, especially if they have expertise, and because it's so hard to break the paradigm. Because paradigms, the status quo bias, we talked about this when we first started. But I think there's this rising frustration. Why don't we have more solutions that we need? If you want to get a colonoscopy and you don't want to be put under anesthesia, you know, and you lose a day of work, you can't get the solution that's available, the pill cam. You can't really get it easily. And there are all kinds of reasons why that is. But the problem is, why don't we have those solutions? And I feel like people are getting frustrated and they want more of them. And I think the more we get frustrated, the more we recognize there's a problem, the more momentum there's going to be towards understanding the second skill. Creativity is not just generating. It's also being able to embrace ideas, recognize them, and move it forward with them as they develop.
We'll leave it there. Thanks to Jennifer Mueller. She is a social psychologist, associate professor at the University of San Diego. She's the author of the new book we've been talking about. It's Creative Change, Why We Resist It, How We Can Embrace It.